for Wayne to go,
I don't think you're going to get it.
Yeah, you got to, I'm ready. You got to, or yeah, or something like that. You're not going to get it, whatever that was.
Whatever. Hello and welcome to Funny Books with Aaron, Polly, Wayne, and Andrew. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
And I am Andrew.
Very exciting to be here with you boys.
Is it?
It is. Huh. It is very exciting. I'm giddy. If I had a tail, it would be wagging.
It's been a good morning.
I got up early. To be greeted at the door.
Yeah. I mean, I just want to jump up in your lap and lick you in the face, Paul. That's what I want.
That's really all I want in life. That's the only reason I've been podcasting for 15 years is for this moment.
That's right.
All Paul wants is a little head.
That's right.
A little bit. Sure. A little morning head. Yeah.
Well, how you boys doing? Everybody good. Well? Everybody good?
It's been good.
It's been a jam-packed week, Aaron. Lots of stuff.
It has. And, you know, this is what, our third time to record on the Discord, and I'm still not used to it.
I don't know. I'm not used to it. We'll get there. We had 15 years of Skype.
I know. I missed my Skype. And let me tell you, we finished recording last week, and I immediately dove into removing the Skype software from my computer. I uninstalled, I deleted, removed it from, you know, the pin at the bottom of the screen, took it out of the startup. Man, you did all the things.
You did the hard breakup. You're like,
yeah, I did. Oh, I was like, I break with thee. And I'd like to point out, when I started up my computer this morning, Skype loaded. It's like I've got a venereal disease.
You might be done with Skype, but Skype is not done with you.
That is right. Despite the fact that it doesn't work. Yeah. Good Lord.
It's stalking you. It's not ready for the breakup, Aaron.
This is Skype's version of driving by your apartment in the middle of the night.
That's right. You up?
I'm still here.
I still love you.
See, I'm just tired this morning because I had to go out and socialize last night.
Ooh,
what? So comedy rock star Mikey Mason, who also was on, which season was it? A Ghost of Rainsboro with us. Long time ago. I forgot he was.
Yeah, that's right.
He was in town, so had to go out, enjoy his show. Got him to play the song "I Want to See B. Arthur Nude." he doesn't normally play that, and so every time he asks for a song recommendation, I yell that out. And this time, he actually played it again.
Nice.
Wayne's that guy at the bar.
Yeah,
I want to see B. Arthur Nude.
Yeah. I mean, everyone else is yelling "Freebird," and I'm like, I want to see B. Arthur Nude. So yeah.
Nice. I mean, that's just like Friday night for Wayne, though. Yeah.
That means going out in public around other people and crowd, and
that's hard. Training.
It's hard.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. My big night out last night was going to the grocery store. Yeah.
I cleaned my kitchen.
Ooh, exciting. That's a Friday.
Friday night.
Well, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Jen was on a phone call with one of her friends, and I was watching Roku. I was watching a TV show in my headphones, so that was my night. I got hooked on Gangs of London on Netflix, so if you haven't seen it, it's very good.
Hmm.
So Wayne is the only one of us who left the house. Oh, no.
No, I went to the grocery store.
You went to the grocery store.
Don't diminish my night out, Paul.
Did you pick up a pizza on the way home?
No. We went. This is a Texas thing. Central Market, which is owned by HEB. It's kind of a gourmet grocery store. You know, a lot of locally produced fare, that kind of thing. And, you know, they had these like food festivals, like, you know, in the fall, they'll have Hatch Chili Fest, where everything's got Hatch chilies in it. And
that's everything in Texas anyway.
Well, but, you know, during Hatch Chili season lasts, but just, you know, that long. And that was me putting my index finger and thumb out there to show you that it's a very short period of time. You know, so they'll have Hatch Chili Fest, they'll have Crab Fest, and this was Texas Fest. which I'm like, isn't that every day? But anyhow, what I found really amusing is that, you know, they had all of these, you know, samples. So, you know, you're going through the produce section and, you know, there's somebody there, you know, cutting up, you know, some fruit or something and, you know, giving it as the samples. You go through the meat market and there's, you know, people with barbecue and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So there were literally people there last night who seemed to be like, this is dinner. And I mean, they're just all queuing up at the samples. And I'm like, just get out of the way. Cause I'm not here to sample. I just want to get my groceries and I want to get the F out. You know, it was super frustrating. And there's this whole, this is okay. This is me, old man, get off my lawn.
I opened up a box here.
There's this crowd of Gen Zers. And it just drives me crazy because they can't walk through the grocery store like human beings and be mindful of the fact that there are other people in the grocery store and, you know, people trying to get through. They've got to walk shoulder to shoulder to shoulder. And it's like this wall of teenager going through the store. And all I wanted to do was just ram my grocery cart through them, you know. It was rough. Violence against the Gen Zers. That's what I was advocating last night.
I feel like but we do not advocate for violence against Gen Zers on this podcast. In fact, you should share this podcast with your favorite Gen Zer so that we can increase our audience size.
I'm like, it's 98 degrees outside. Why are you wearing a knit cap? You know,
because it's what our friends are doing, Aaron.
God.
Welcome to Angry Old Guys with Aaron and Polly.
Really just with Aaron, but yeah.
Really just with Aaron. I mean, we're all angry, just not at this moment.
Yeah. I didn't pick up a pizza on the way home, Paul. I actually had a frozen pizza at home, though.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
Did Aaron actually ever answer what he had for dinner in that rant? Or
yeah, I don't know. It was something about Hatch Chili's. Was Hatch Chili's in it, Aaron?
I had chicken fried steak.
Okay. What did that have to do with stopping for groceries?
What was that?
What did that have to do with
groceries? Well, I got the chicken fried steak there at the grocery store.
Oh, okay.
Because they've got a little, you know, prepared dinner market. And so, you know, he
got it. Okay. I'm with you now.
No. My move, the reason I asked the question is because my move is to go to the grocery store and then pick up dinner on the way home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I'm not going to cook anything. I'm not an animal.
Yeah, I just spent all of my remaining energy grocery shopping. Don't expect me to cook also.
Yeah.
But I did have enough energy to watch a couple of movies this week, and so did some of you guys. What'd you watch, Andrew?
I was just going to say, I actually watched The Gorge, finally. It's been in my social media feeds for weeks, and I actually sat down and watched it a couple nights ago.
Dear listener, if you're unfamiliar with The Gorge, it's on Apple Plus. It stars Miles Teller and...
she has a long lead. Name. Yeah.
Anya Taylor-Joy. Yeah, she's in everything nowadays. Yeah. And they are guarding a giant hole in the earth, Gorge. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah,
Gorge.
It's the title. I guess I'm into the things on social media that makes it think I would be interested in this movie, and it was pretty good. I mean, it was not life changing or anything like that, but it was a fun. It was only an hour and a half long, so it didn't drag on, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Anyone else seen The Gorge yet?
I didn't even know it was a thing, but I'll check it out.
I have never heard of it, and I still don't do Apple.
Yeah, I was about to say, Wayne's got Apple issues, so he won't be watching that. But
fair.
But I saw it. You know, and it's also one of the reasons the actors are fine, but the director is Scott Derrickson, I think, who directed Sinister and Doctor Strange. I think that's who directed that movie.
Yeah.
So I was excited about it. It is okay. I didn't love it. But I mean, it's worth watching. I mean, it's at home. It's not like you're paying your Apple TV subscription, but you know, it's not like you have to go anywhere to watch it. So I think it's worth watching. The actors are good. I think it's a little CG for my, and I know that's a common complaint, but it's a bit CG for me. But other than that, I thought it was fine.
If you're still talking about this.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say I really enjoyed the design on the Hollow Men and the things that you explore. I enjoyed the aesthetic of it.
Yeah, it's worth watching, Aaron.
I have got Murderbot queued up as my next view on Apple Plus. I would have started it last night, but decided that I would watch the Predator Killer of Killers.
Is Murderbot based on the book series?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and it's gotten good reviews, and I'm really interested in seeing it, but I just haven't gotten to it yet. But I've got to watch it before Foundation starts up, because I think that's due to start like this month or next. So,
go ahead, Andrew.
Is that Alexander Skarsgård that's in Murderbot?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. My next queued up item is Fallout, the TV series on Prime Video.
Oh, it is so good.
Have you not seen it yet?
I have not. I've heard it's good from you guys, especially. And they announced this week that it is going to be one of the experiences at this year's Halloween Horror Nights will be based on the Fallout TV show. So now I have to watch it. Never
played any of the video games, Paul?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I don't know how you will take it. I mean, I'm a big fan of the video game series. I was a huge fan of the Prime series. I'll be curious to see what a non-fan of the video game thinks of it.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I'll let you know.
I've not played any of the games either, but I'm interested in it, just haven't gotten around to it.
But Aaron, you did mention Predator, Killer of Killers, which came out this week on Hulu.
Yeah, speaking of video games, because it looks like it's, you know, Red Dead Redemption. the animation style, I was not a fan of.
Really? I quite liked it, actually.
I thought it was very well done for a video game. I really did. I was like, man, if this was a first-person shooter, man, I would be Johnny down for this. But I really found it distracting, the animation style. I get it. I mean, I think it's probably super affordable for them, but I really wish they had done something else, something more in the Marvel animation wheelhouse. I think I would have preferred, just because I just kept thinking, where's my joystick? You know,
because it's funny that it hits you that way, because it struck me as very Into the Spider-Verse.
Uh-huh.
That I for me, it kind of hit me as that animation style.
Oh, it didn't. I mean, it was very, you know, for me, there is a game I used to play on PlayStation called, I want to say it was Way of the Samurai. Particularly when it moved to the Japanese story, I thought it was extremely reminiscent of that animation style. And, you know, it didn't feel like a movie to me. It felt like a video game. But that said, I really enjoyed it. I loved every single one of the stories, and I usually hate anthology stories because usually the vibe is so different as you move from story to story, and it can be jarring and it can be hard to make that transition. And so, you know, you start off with this great Viking story and with a really unlikely protagonist in that story being, you know, this elder you know, Viking queen who, I mean, is just badass as she can be, just as badass as she can be. And, you know, I loved everything about it. And I mean, I was enjoying it so much, Paul, I was almost disappointed when the Predator shows up, because I was enjoying all the Viking shit so much. And then, you know, you wrap up that story and it moves to the samurai story. And similarly, I was very much enjoying all the Japanese, you know, samurai and ninja stuff going on. It was almost a distractant when the Predator shows up. And it's almost like Heroes Interrupted is kind of the theme of it, because, you know, you get to, you know, World War II, Pacific Theater story, which was really unique, because I'm like, how, this guy's a pilot, and I'm like, how are they going to do this? Because it's always, you know, person to person combat, you know, very physical hand to hand combat sort of thing. And this was the first time, to my recollection, that we've seen ship combat. You know, that it, World War II fighter plane versus the Predator spaceship. And I thought that was wild, despite some very laughable moments where the pilot ventures out onto the wing of his plane while in the air to fix a burning engine. I was like, when did this turn into Looney Tunes? You know,
that also doesn't sound like much of a fight, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, World War II plane versus a spaceship.
Agreed.
No, that, yeah, one-sided.
Yeah.
They do a good job with it, though.
They did. I mean, there is a whole lot of, you know, suspending disbelief. And also a laughable moment is when we bring our characters together to fight the predators. When one of the characters has his arm cut off and he just, you know, holds his shoulder and keeps moving. I'm like, you know, that's not how that works. I'm pretty sure it takes about 6 weeks for that to recover.
So. Two weeks. I'll fix that right up.
But other than those elements, I found it super engaging, a lot of fun. The ending of it would seem to indicate that there might be more, which I would certainly ship for that, because I was very entertained by the whole thing. And like I said, I'm not usually a fan of anthology stories, but this really worked.
I have still never seen a Predator movie of any kind, but I am looking forward to something that's tangentially Predator related coming up. I saw the trailer for Alien Earth, and that looks so good.
That does look good. I'm looking forward to that. Wait, you've never seen an Alien movie, have you?
I've never seen an Alien movie either. This will be the first Alien thing that I watch, because I'm planning on watching the series, because that trailer looked good.
Okay. Well, Wayne, I myself might recommend you check out Predator Killer of Killers as your entry point into that universe. Now, there are some Easter egg callbacks to prior movies that you won't necessarily get, but whatever. But other than that, I mean, I think, you know, like Aaron mentioned, it kind of has this anthology format that, you know, these are all new characters, and all you really need to know is that the Predator comes and hunts. You know, it is a society that is really kind of worships the art of the hunt, right? So that's basically the premise, that the Predator finds, you know, the baddest bags in the universe.
It's a society. Hunt. Yeah, it's a society of big game hunters, right? So yeah, it's exactly. All safari all the time. And, you know, so they seek out the predators of other societies and pit themselves against them.
It's like a planet of cravens.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, and Wayne's reading that book, Predator versus Spider-Man, and features cravens.
I've read a lot of comics with predators and with aliens, so yeah. I'm familiar with the concept of predators, and I am interested in, like, as you guys have described this, I do like anthologies, even though every anthology is bound to have stories I like and stories I hate. I take that as a given.
But I don't think there was a single story I didn't like, honestly. I think, to Aaron's point, I think the weakest part of the movie was, and this is something that's been established in the Marvel comics, so I appreciate that they've really kind of embraced, you know, the outer continuity, because the Predator movies don't really give much about, you know, the predators. They basically have a predator show up and kill things. You know, a lot of the mythology has kind of been established in these other things, and so, but basically these characters who are throughout Earth's history are pulled from Earth, frozen, and then can team up. So that's how you have the Viking lady, the ninja guy, and the you know, the World War II guy team up on the Predator planet in some undisclosed time. We don't know. Actually, it would have to be after the events of the most recent Predator movie, Prey. So it's in the 1900s, I would think. I don't know when that movie's actually set, but it has to be set in the 1900s because there's a flintlock pistol in it. But anyway, so I think, Aaron, I loved the movie. I thought it was great. I had no issues with the animation. In fact, I quite liked the animation. I think it served the action of the movie well. But I mean, I thought it was I really thought it was a good flick. And, you know, Predator films, they're like 50-50 for me. I like the first two, and I like Prey. The stuff in between, a little less so, Predators and The Predator.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this one, I genuinely enjoyed. And I'm looking forward to Badlands, because I think this is, you know, I don't know how, but certainly this feels like they're setting up some stuff that's going to happen in Predator Badlands, which is the next movie.
Yeah, I dug it. I dug it. I would watch a follow up to it. So I thought it was super entertaining. It was time well spent. And yeah, really good for Saturday morning cartoons.
You know, this sounds a lot. I haven't seen it yet, but this anthology sounds a lot like the comic that they recently had. Well, I think it was called Predator: The Preserve, where they had eight humans from different points of time. I mean, is it very similar? Just kind of the same general concept.
Same concept.
Same general concept. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
But Paul, I watched Accountant 2 this week when it hit Prime, which I was super excited about. And I got to tell you, I think this might be my new favorite cinematic universe is the Accountant series. I know it's only two.
It's Batman versus the Punisher. But Batman teams up with the Punisher.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
I really very much enjoy it. And I hope they make more. And I was thinking about it in contrast to John Wick, because I think they share some blood there. In terms of what those stories are doing. And I just enjoy this so much more than I enjoy John. And I know that's probably heresy to you, Paul, but there's just something I find very related to these characters and things like, you know, his little room of savants that supports him when he's in the field. I'm like, this is awesome. I love his little, you know, clutch of teenage neurodivergents that are supporting him. I think it's awesome. I love this story, and I just need so much more of it.
No, I think, you know, I wouldn't say it's sacrilege to say it's better. I mean, I like the John Wick films. In fact, this week I went and saw Ballerina with Ana de Armas, which is a spinoff of the John Wick films, and is badass. I mean, she is so, in fact, you know, I would put it up there, if not better than some of the John Wick films, because she's just so good in the role. It's really a fun action film, and it's not 2.5 hours long like the last few John Wick films have been. It's not overdone. So I really liked it. But no, The Accountant 2 is great. And I think, to your point, the difference, I think, between a film like The Accountant 2 and, you know, like the John Wick films is these characters are a bit more relatable. Mm-hmm. You know, they are flawed. They're more human. You know, I wouldn't say they're less superhuman in that, you know, it's not like you really are worried that Ben Affleck or John Bernthal are going to die at any point in these films. But you know, they have their own stuff going on. Right. Ben Affleck has, I think, Asperger's in the movie. And you know, John Bernthal certainly has something going on. So it's interesting, the leads and, you know, the way they portray the characters but it's great. I mean, Accountant 2 is really good film, and it's free now on Prime Video. And it is so, in my mind, it is so much, I liked the first Accountant, but this one is, it like steps up the action, steps up the buddy cop aspect of it. And, you know, like it's a very different film than the first one.
What I liked about Accountant 2 is that they didn't waste any time retelling you the story. You know, like, you know, a lot of times in a sequel, they'll spend some time letting you know what happened before. They really don't do that in this movie. It's like, you know, you need to have seen the first movie, catch up, you know, but you also don't have to have seen the first movie because they explain to you what you need to know as stuff is happening. And that, I think, is my favorite thing about this movie is that stuff starts happening immediately. Yeah. You know, there's not a slow run up to what's happening. I mean, you're in it really kind of from the jump. I dug it. And I'm drawing a blank on his name, the former FBI director that's in the film.
J.K. Simmons?
Thank you, J.K. Simmons. He was fantastic. And though he's only in the movie for all of maybe 10 minutes, I loved him. I thought he was great. I really very much enjoyed The Accountant too. Highly recommend it.
Especially now that it's home, like, watch it. It's definitely, if you're listening to this podcast, it is very likely you will like this movie.
Yeah, agreed.
But, you know, I know that we're talking about streaming movies, but there's a couple of big cinema releases coming up next month. The hype is building for Superman and Fantastic Four. Tickets are now on sale. I don't know if they're on sale for both, but I know tickets are on sale for Fantastic Four. They went on sale this week. You know, we got some popcorn bucket reveals. You can have your popcorn out of a giant Galactus head or, you know, a Superman popcorn bucket. So the hype's building.
Yeah, I don't know which buckets I want because I've only ever gotten one collector's bucket from a movie for the popcorn stuff. And that was I got my wife the bucket that came with Minecraft movie, which was a redstone bucket. And it wasn't nearly as impressive as any of these that I've seen for Fantastic Four or Superman. But I am very much on board the hype train, and I have bought every Superman toy I have found so far. I'm sitting here wearing a shirt with Crypto on it from the movie. I am all in. I am so excited.
I do like that Galactus.
That Galactus bucket looks pretty righteous.
I just looked. The Fantastic Four movie tickets are on sale now. Superman is not yet, despite the fact that it's coming out earlier. So not sure what that is, but I'm sure Superman tickets will be going on sale very soon. But Wayne, you know, I've talked about this on the podcast. I very much hesitate to buy merchandise before a movie comes out now. I learned my lesson hardcore.
You and I both went out and bought a bunch of Star Wars stuff before some of the new movies came out.
Not even so much Star Wars, because I will tell you, I still enjoyed the Star Wars movies. The movie that broke me was Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I was literally the guy who monitored the UPS deliveries to get the Indiana Jones toys at, you know, this is Toys R Us days, to get the Indiana Jones toys as soon as they dropped. And because, you know, that was back before the days of buying things online, you know, and stuff like that. That shit's easier now. So, yeah, that movie broke me. I'm like, never again will I go all in on merchandise until I've seen the movie. I broke the rule a little bit for Superman, and that I did purchase a hat this week with the new Superman symbol. But I'm like, that's safe. It's still a Superman hat in the end.
That's your toe in the water. That's what that is. That is your toe in the water.
My canary in the coal mine.
No. It's what it's going to be is you're all of a sudden going to fall all the way in, and we're going to see Paul, and you know he's gonna be wearing his Superman pajama bottoms. He'll have a Superman sweater on. You know,
Crypto backpack,
his Superman cap, Superman bathrobe. I mean, it's going to be all Superman all the time.
Yeah. See, I'm just not seeing nearly this level with Fantastic Four. I mean.
The merch that I've seen for Fantastic Four is not nearly as interesting.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I haven't seen nearly as much. I want Fantastic Four to have a whole toy line that's out for kids, because I want them to get kids hyped and excited so the kids want their parents to go and bring people to the theaters. Because, I mean, let's face it, Fantastic Four, it's got an uphill battle to get people in theaters because people hated the previous movies. And every time I mention Fantastic Four to people, they immediately start remembering the old movies, and they just don't think a Fantastic Four movie can work. The only thing that really I'm able to get people on is the fact that it's a period piece.
Yeah, let me ask you guys a question. Is it a mistake that they cast Pedro Pascal in this movie? Is there Pedro Pascal fatigue? Is it just, you know, he's in everything? What do you think about that?
I don't think there's fatigue. I think he's still hot. So I think, honestly, it's the right timing to cast Pedro Pascal in the role. I don't think he's right for the role. So I think, you know, in the end, it's only going to matter if he's good and if the movie, you know, works with him in that role. But I think it was right to cast him in something while he's hot, because he's still kind of there. Because he's honestly got a year of stuff coming. We're going to get a lot of Pedro Pascal over the next year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you already had a lot of Pedro Pascal, but there's still, you know, a whole bunch chambered.
We're still a year away from the Mandalorian movie. So, like, we're getting some Pedro Pascal, whether we want it or not. And I like Pedro, but, like, I think it was wrong to cast him in that role.
I am in a bit of Pedro Pascal fatigue because he is in absolutely every franchise right now. And I would agree. Like, he is my biggest concern about the movie. I like him. I like him. Love him in Mandalorian, but he doesn't feel like the right fit for the character, especially when we had such a great one in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, John Krasinski. John.
He just nailed the role. Same.
I really wish they'd use John for that.
Yeah. I will tell you, I think for me, and I, the casting of this movie was all based on who's hot right now, right? So you've got Pedro Pascal because he's hot right now. You've got the guy who plays Johnny Storm, Joseph Quinn, because he's hot right now from Stranger Things. You've got Ebon Moss Bachrock from The Bear playing the Thing because The Bear's hot right now. And you've got Vanessa Kirby because she's hot right now because of Mission Impossible, right? So it's like, I don't know that I mean, we talked about this when they first cast the movie, but like, I don't know that I like any of those people for those specific roles. I mean, I think The Thing, you know, as long as the voice is good, like, he'll be fine because The Thing is all CG anyway.
Right.
But like, I don't, you know, what I've seen of Vanessa Kirby and Pedro Pascal, don't get me wrong, I like both actors. I don't see any warmth between those two when I'm watching like trailers and stuff. And Vanessa Kirby, I mean, I just really know her from Mission Impossible, where she's kind of like this badass, you know, heartless, character.
I don't know any of the other actors or actresses other than Pascal. And the one that does stand out to me in the trailer, I think the guy they got playing Johnny feels like a good fit in the trailers.
I think Johnny's an easy character to cast, if I'm being honest. Like, it kind of feels like Johnny in every movie is the one good one. Right. Like, yeah. I mean, Chris Evans did fine. Michael B. Jordan did fine. Like, you know, I feel like Johnny Storm is just an easy, like, hey, you just go on screen and be the party guy. Be funny. So I don't know. I'm hopeful. I did get my opening night tickets and I'm looking forward to chatting about it with you guys.
So let me ask one more question.
No.
popcorn buckets, movie themed popcorn buckets is really, you know, sort of become a recent thing in terms of, you know, a specially designed bucket versus just the regular round bucket with the movie logo and artwork on it, right? So, you know, you got the Galactus bucket head that we see for Fantastic Four and, you know, all different kinds. You know, I sent Paul a link to the Jaws 50th anniversary bucket that's coming out. You know, I feel like that Jaws, you know, hey, let's issue some buckets for the 50th anniversary. We should do that with a bunch of different movies, you know, like a Remains of the Day popcorn bucket, you know.
Basic Instinct. I've got some ideas there.
or Schindler's List. I mean, I think that there is a whole missed opportunity to go back and revisit some of these major properties and issue popcorn buckets for them is all I'm saying.
AMC, give us a call. We got ideas.
I like how you one up to me there at the Basic Instinct. Oh, that's great.
Oh, geez. So, lest you believe you're not listening to a comic book podcast, we actually do have, this was actually a big week in comic books with a lot of number ones that in my mind were all pretty mediocre spoilers. But let's start with probably the most mediocre of all. Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion, number one. We talked about this last week. This is Miles Morales Spider-Man making his way into the current Ultimate Universe, which I'm kind of out on. Like, I'm probably five issues behind on Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm not reading any of the other Ultimate books. It lost me quickly. Like,
oh, Paul, I will say I've dropped out every other Ultimate book except for Ultimate Spider-Man.
I've purchased it. I'm just behind on it.
I was behind too, and I got caught up this week on Ultimate Spider-Man. That book is so good, and it went, there is a drastic twist. Like, it shifted gears, and it is, the book is still very good. I'm still all on board on the regular Ultimate Spider-Man. This book, though, was terrible, and it's sad because I was looking forward to this book. I went in wanting to see Miles interacting with this, wanting to see Miles, what his, he thought about the Maker and all of that, and instead, I realized, first of all, I am out of touch with Miles because I guess he has a sister now.
Yeah, like a baby sister. I say that like I know. I just know from reading the exact same book. So that's all I know.
Yeah. And I, you know, you have the Ultimate Spider-Man is in this book. You have his son in the, you know, in that suit that is not really a Venom suit, but it kind of looks like a Venom suit. And I should have enjoyed their interactions with Miles, and I should have enjoyed this book and the fact that his son is a bigger fan of Miles than his own father after just meeting him. All of that seemed like it should have been good, and it just fell flat.
Yeah, you know, let me describe this book for you. Miles Morales and his 18-month-old baby sister have been sucked into the Ultimate Universe, where he immediately comes across the Spider-Man and his son, the Ultimate Spider-Man and his son. And then they proceed to basically just swing around New York City randomly, looking in people's windows, looking for the 18-month-old kid. That is literally the entirety of this first issue. And I'm like, what?
And they even make a comment of how creepy it is.
They're like, what is happening? Like, why are they literally like doing nothing in this book? Like, I got halfway through the book. I'm like, is this it? Like, are they literally just like looking in random people's windows without any type of plan or anything?
Yeah, Miles gets the brilliant idea of, why don't I go to my home? Because that's the one place that, you know, my baby sister will know. She's 18 months and doesn't seem to talk or have any. She's not going to go home. She doesn't know her address. What kind of stupid idea is that? You know, this book was just, it fell really flat. There are some interesting character moments, but not a lot of them. And I wanted to enjoy it, and I just, I didn't hate it. It was just boring and flat.
Yeah, it's a terrible book.
It was a big out of this week, I've read 4 books. I enjoyed 2. I hated 1. And this one for me was my disappointment, because I went in wanting to love it and expecting to like it, and it just didn't do anything for me.
Well, did you like The World to Come anymore, or is that the one you hated?
That's the one I hated.
So The World to Come, we talked about this last week also. You know, it is the future of the Marvel Universe as told through a Marvel Knights lens. It brings back Christopher Priest from his run on Black Panther. Art and co-writing by Joe Quesada. And, you know, is very much a Black Panther-focused book. You know, kind of who's taking over the reins of the Black Panther at some undisclosed point in the future. I don't know. It bounces around a lot. I kind of lost track. But Aaron also read this.
I did, and this is going to represent the first in a theme for me this week, is that I really wanted to like this book. I loved the original Christopher Priest and Joe Quesada Black Panther books. I thought they were fantastic. I think some of the best Black Panther work ever done. I did. I just completely grooved to those stories. And I was looking to just, you know, step back in with this creative team returning. And I enjoyed the Mites back in the day. And was really hoping for a return to form. And Paul, I'd like to point out, you said last week, well, you know, I haven't seen Joe Quesada draw anything in a while. I hope it's good. Well, I thought the artwork is fantastic. I really did.
Actually, I thought his artwork held up. Now, I do think Richard Isenov, the colorist on the book, which is weird. You know, we don't normally talk about colorists, but I think he did a lot of heavy lifting. I'm not saying Joe Quesada is bad, because I'm sure he is, but like, this book is also heavily touched up and beautifully color illustrated.
Yeah, I think the book is beautifully produced. I think it's really stunning to look at. I found myself enjoying the pictures a lot more than I was enjoying the story.
Which is a shame, because there's so many words on the page. Maybe a few less words over this art, please.
And this is something that I see a lot in comics today, that I think that if you were to boil the story down to just, hey, here's the story, and take out all the clever storytelling tricks and the slow reveals, you don't have a lot there, right? I see that, I'm sad to say, a lot with Tom King over in the DC books. And I get super frustrated with that. Like, you know, stop doing the slow reveal. Stop with the slow rising of the curtain. You know, just show us what you got. You know, tell me the stupid story. And that's what I felt like about this, is that, you know, it's a whole bunch of just moving your cheese around so that you have to chase the story, you know, to one corner and then to the next. And I got frustrated with it. In fact, I put this book down and came back to it the next day. And the only reason I came back to it is because I knew we were going to talk about it today. I was super frustrated by it. And it does all of this jumping back in time. And, you know, it's not like previously in 1941, it's, you know, 36 years ago, 4 years before that, 10 years before that last thing. And I'm like, I can't keep any of this straight. You know,
yeah, everything is however many years before the world to come.
Yeah.
You know what? It's just, it's teasing whatever the world to come is, whatever that event was, not telling us what it was. So that's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
It's bouncing around in time to the point that I, who love time travel stories, can't keep track of when anything is happening, because the beginning of every couple pages has a new different years from, you know, when. I don't know a lot of, like, when it gets far enough ahead, I don't know any of the characters anymore. I don't know if these are new characters or from a different run. The big surprise give is that his son is white. That's supposed to be something that makes me dying to see the next issue. I hated this book, and I wanted to love a future of the Marvel Universe book, but it's the storytelling style and method that destroys the story.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's just a bunch of dressing up a bad story. You know, I mean, I honestly, I didn't feel like there was anything there to warrant a return to the book. You know, I warrant an issue two, because I'm like, there's so much flash here, but there's no substance. You know, you're just eating icing. And I found it super.
It wasn't a long book, and it could have been half the size. God,
it felt like it was forever. It felt like I read this. It felt like a 900-page book. I was like, Jesus, when is this going to be over?
Yeah, because they, listen, it's not actually a long book, but it felt it during the read. Oh. And when you look at it, it's like everything that was done could have been done in well under half the length of it if they weren't doing the bouncing around they're doing. They have, every time they do the however many years after, it's a one-page spread that has, it's, the one-page spreads are some beautiful artwork. And maybe that's why they did it, was to give a chance to, you know, really showcase some of the art. But again, it just,
I'd rather
see that art. I don't need to see a whole
one-page spread. It's style over substance.
Yeah. Well, and similarly, I had very, very similar feelings about Imperial.
This was a week of whelming, really.
Well, and I mean, I went into Imperial like, you know, I love me some space action and, you know, big space event, cosmic event books. Love those things. Annihilation Conquest, all those books. I just love them. Kree Scroll War, the first one. Love it. I mean, those are just aimed directly at me. And I can't begin to tell you, number one, how I felt like this book was way too long. And number two, similarly, the story was told, was you know, slow revealed. You know, who are the bad guys? Why is all this happening? You know, the mystery is not so much that, you know, we've got this guy is the villain. The mystery is, what the hell story are we telling? And I find that so frustrating. I really hated this book. And I hate, I hate what they've done to Peter Quill.
Yeah.
I mean, the Star-Lord is just not my guy anymore. Used to be. They started changing up his character when he started interacting with the X-Men, and he's never come back right. And I really, really, really hate Peter Quill, and he's a character I used to love.
Yeah, I was also disappointed in the portrayal of Quill and also Nova, really. I don't really like how passive he's become, but I did not mind. It did go until it was like 65 pages long, this first issue. And I think part of that was to get through maybe all of this slow burn in the first issue, hopefully. But you know, I enjoyed the beginning. I enjoyed, you know, showing up on Sakaar. I like seeing all the Hulks, or most of the Hulks together. So I don't know, but it did kind of drag on. It did seem like it was too slow, too decompressed. I would have liked it to have a faster pace.
Yeah. I don't know that I hated the book, but I definitely had no interest, if I'm being honest, which is crazy. Cause I like Star-Lord. I like Hulk.
I love Nova. I love all these characters. Yeah, Richard Rider Nova is like my favorite. Love that guy. And I just
did not care for the art. The art is very anime-esque, but not like not manga, you know, just like an anime cartoon.
Pointy chins and noses.
Yeah, which I mean, normally I don't have an issue with, but it wasn't what I wanted from this book. And I got to be honest, like, you know, so the book starts with, you know, Hulk and Amadeus Cho, who is also a Hulk now. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's been Braun. I mean, he had different names, right? He's been the Totally Awesome Hulk. Was it Awesome Hulk?
Yeah, Totally Awesome Hulk.
Yeah,
then I forgot about that. Yeah, so they're visiting, you know, Sakaar because Hulk's son is dead. I'm like, oh, shit. But it's like a different son?
I think it's Scar. No.
Yeah, is it Scar?
Yeah, Scar, I think.
Okay, so it is Scar, but like they never at any point say his name.
No, they don't.
And then they show an image of him. I'm like, that doesn't look like Scar, but maybe it's not an image of him. I don't know. Like, it didn't even feel like I was reading a Jonathan Hickman book, if I'm being honest, because of his cosmic stuff is usually so distinctive. This is kind of a theme now where we're kind of going with these last two books in that it's like stellar creators, but certainly not at their best, you know, not on their best game. And yeah, so Imperial, I mean, in none of the books that I have read so far will I purchase a second issue.
Yeah, no, agreed. I was like, man, I hate to say this, but I don't see me picking up number two.
I wanted to like all three of them, and I just didn't. And it's like, well, that's kind of disappointing because especially because these are all number one books, big books, you know, that could be, you know, new reader friendly, event worthy, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, not really. It's not good.
Yeah. Well, and you know, there's nothing better than a great big event book to get you through the summer. Right. Yeah. And I mean, that just harkens back to when we were kids. And so far I got nothing, Paul.
Yeah. Oh, you have an except. Well, I will say, before we get into this last book, the one book that I enjoyed this week, we're not even talking about, and that's Absolute Superman number 8.
Yeah,
I think the Absolute books and the Energon Universe books are basically like the books I'm enjoying most on the market right now.
Yeah, I will say Absolute Superman, I had an issue getting into this time as they began the new arc, but it ended strong.
Yeah, yeah. But, all right, Aaron, I know you're excited because we're going to talk about a big monkey book.
I'm just saying, you know, if there is, if I'm looking for that summer event book to keep me jazzed throughout those long, hot days, Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2 might be the one.
I don't know. I did not. I wouldn't say I disliked this first issue. I didn't love the first.
What is wrong with you, Paul? Yeah,
stupid Paul.
I don't know, it didn't grab me. Maybe I was just in a bad mood because I had read three shitty books right before.
That may be it because I started off. I had to reset because I had just finished World to Come.
I will tell you, you know, this is the book because I had read like those three books, this is the fourth book I read, not because I was, it was the one I was least interested in, but the other, but this was, you know, a continuation of a story that I'd already read, and the other ones had superstar creative teams and blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, okay, I'll read this one last. Let me build up to it.
This was the book for me that turned it around, where it's like, okay, I've read two books I really disliked, and I started this one, and it, first of all, going through some of my complaints on the other books, this one nailed the surprise ending. It had a ended on a scene that makes me want to get the next issue. I cared about the characters and their interactions throughout it. Part of that was I enjoyed their take on these characters in the first crossover.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a lot of action yet.
And that's okay.
I enjoyed the build of it quite a bit.
I will say, unfortunately, Andrew had to drop, but I will say the one thing that had me cheering in this book is that finally somebody killed Amanda Waller.
Oh my God, it was great, wasn't it?
I know it's a Ultimate Universe book, but I'm like,
I'm not sure. This is my early my nomination for shit moment of the year, because I about jumped out of my chair. Yes! You know?
It was a surprise ending that made me excited for the next issue, because you have her doing her Amanda Waller thing of just giving orders and she's in charge.
Yeah.
And finally someone is just like, no, I'm done with your bullshit.
Just and put a cap in her. Yeah. It was great. I just hope, you know, it's an alternate universe, so they can leave her dead. I hope they do.
I hope they do. Like if she fucking stands up in the next issue, I'm gonna be mad.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, if it, like, I was like, yes.
Yeah. If Amanda Waller lives, we riot. That's all I'm saying. My only complaint about this book was that in the preview pages released in other DC books earlier this at the end of May, they spoiled a key sequence for this story, and I just hate that they did that, because I think I would have really have rather have seen what happened to King Shark in the pages of the book versus having had that development spoiled for me last month.
That was a fun part of the story.
It was a blast. I loved it. Now, fortunately, they don't tell you everything, you know, but they show you just too much in those preview pages. I just stinking loved that. And I just love how they. Yeah. Oh, they didn't tell you what we're doing. Well, what do you mean? You know, I thought it was great. Thought it was great. I really enjoyed the book. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. One of the other things I enjoyed is something you don't see very often, and that's like Lex Luthor and the Legion of Doom standing there in cuffs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Just like you get all of these, you know, second and third string villains to be part of Task Force X, Suicide Squad. You don't get someone like Lex Luthor and Black Manta. And I like their interactions where they're like, you know, you think this is bad, try being on Legion of Doom with him.
Yeah.
You know what this book very much struck me as? And it's something that, you know, I wish DC would embrace a little bit more, because we're certainly struggling with what they're doing in Justice League right now. This strikes me as a very superpowers, iteration of the Justice League. And what I mean by that, you know, and I talked a little bit about it in the first Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, is that like all the characters are basically their iconic, you know, they strip everybody down to their core concept, and you know, they're told in their most iconic way. And you know, that kind of struck me as a little bit of a superpowers thing, right? You know, there's not a lot of complexity to what's going on. You know, the most complicated human matter here that we're dealing with is, you know, should the Flash tell Iris that he's the Flash?
Or he's married her. After he's married her.
I love that. I love that he's married her and hasn't told her, because that is going to backfire in a fun way.
Yeah.
And I like how, like, immediately after the wedding, he pops over to talk to the members of the Justice League that couldn't show up at the wedding. It is such a minor touch of the story, but I love that aspect of, I wish I could have invited you, but if someone like Bruce Wayne shows up at my wedding, there's going to be questions.
Yeah. Well, and I also liked how chatty the characters were. You know, we get to see a lot of dialogue, personal dialogue between the characters that, you know, a lot of times you don't get in these books.
Yeah,
I enjoyed them having fun.
Well done
yeah.
dialogue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I enjoyed the fun element of it. I mean, it's a ridiculous book, right? It's Godzilla versus Kong versus the Justice League. That's ridiculous. And let's lean into that. And I liked it. It felt like, you know, it felt like a summer blockbuster and, you know, the ridiculous quips and whatnot. It was a lot of fun. I dug it. I can't wait for the rest of the books.
Hey, guys, before we wrap up here, because I know you're about to ask me what comes out next week. Last time we podcasted.
Here we go.
It's a good thing.
Uh-huh.
Last time we podcasted, I had mentioned that I was going to the Spider-Man Museum at the Griffin Museum of Science and Industry, but we haven't spoken since.
Oh, yeah. I saw I saw some pictures and comments you made on it. I am excited to hear about it because I plan on making a trip up to Chicago in the next year just to go see this.
Yeah. So if you are in the Chicago area or check out, there's a website, just Google Spider-Man, the exhibition, because it's a traveling exhibit, but I think it's here in Chicago until February. It is so, so, so good for people like us. And what I mean by that is, yes, they have movie props from the No Way Home or from the Tom Holland, the Andrew Garfield and the Tobey Maguire movies. They've got movie props there. They have life-size statues of many of the main Spider-Man characters. So you've got a couple of Spider-Man, you've got Miles Morales, you've got Ghost Spider, you've got a couple of stand-ups for photos and things like that. But, you know, for me, what I loved most about the exhibit is there is so, so much original art from Steve Ditko, from John Romita Sr., from Todd McFarlane, from one of my favorites, Eric Larson. They had... I'm not as much anymore, but Eric Larson's one of my favorite Spider-Man artists of all time. They had his original art for the cover of the finale of the Revenge of the Sinister Six, which I don't know if you guys remember that, but that's when the Sinister Six had this planet, this like giant creature called Gog that was the sixth member, and then Spider-Man had to team up with the new Fantastic Four, so you had Hulk and Ghost Rider, and you know all that, and so there it was like a cover that like pulled out into four splashes long, and yeah, they had the original art there, and I was like, oh, this is so cool.
I loved that story, Paul. Even Sleepwalker was in an issue of that.
And Sleepwalker was in it, yes. And Solo, you know, it was that prime David Mitchell and Eric Larson run, you know, that came after. This is when Eric Larson was writing and doing the art after Todd McFarlane left the adjectiveless Spider-Man book. But, you know, there's just so much original art. It's got a lot about the history of Spider-Man. There's a lot to see and do. It is highest possible recommendation. If you grew up a Spider-Man fan like me, it'll touch you in your heart.
So actually, Paul, that reminds me of something. I don't know how long it's going on, but there is right now an Audible sale for audiobooks. And in that are a lot of Marvel books that you can get for like $2. And some of the books I want to call out on there, I remember as a kid reading Spider-Man the Lizard Sanction as a novel. That book is on there. The Peter David written Incredible Hulk, What Savage Beast is on there. So I picked up a ton of Marvel audiobooks that I remember reading as a kid and just really enjoying. For like $2.
Nice. I bought like 30 books this week on that 85% off sale.
Yep.
Well, and you know, if somehow me mentioning this, the Eric Larson run, the Sinister Six stuff is intriguing to you, they have, if you're a Comixology Unlimited member, they have two trade paperbacks that are available through Comixology Unlimited. One's called Sinister Six, one's called Revenge of the Sinister Six. The first one collects the very first appearance of the Sinister Six, as well as the Sinister Six six-part that was featured in Amazing Spider-Man, and then the sequel, which was Revenge of the Sinister Six, is in the second book. So I know what I'm downloading both now.
Well, that's all really nice and everything, Paul. But hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week in comic shops, we have a bunch of stuff coming out. We have Absolute Batman number 8. Which is the start of like the second main arc in that book from Scott Snyder and Nick Dragotta, and features the first appearance of Absolute Bane, Also from DC Comics, we have Action Comics issue 1087, which is the start of Mark Waid's arc on the book, which is really a focus on Clark Kent's early days. So it's more of a Superboy, tale.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready to lean into some Superboy.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. You also have Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen teaming up on Robin and Batman, Jason Todd, which they did one, I think, last year that was focused on Dick Grayson. But it's kind of an early, like a year one tale. But this one focused on Jason Todd. And but the big new release from DC Comics is Trinity, Daughter of Wonder Woman, issue one. It's been advertised in the DC books this week. I think this is original content, not reprints of the back matter from the main Wonder Woman book. But, it's the same creative team, Tom King, Baylen Ortega, telling a new miniseries tale of Trinity, Daughter of Wonder Woman.
From is that the image you shared?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All
right. Yep. From Marvel Comics, you have One World Under Doom, issue 5 of 9. I think I'm the only one still in it, even though I'm behind.
That's another series that I really wanted to like.
Yeah. No, I'm still reading it, Paul.
Oh, are you? Okay, I'm behind. But you also have Giant Size Amazing Spider-Man issue 1, which is kind of a one-off just to kind of celebrate this big summer, stuff that's going on. But features creative teams and writers including Kevin Smith, Al Ewing, Chip Zdarsky, Giuseppe Camuncoli, Mark Buckingham, and more. So
I will pick it up, Paul, because they did a Giant Size X-Men recently, and I loved it. So I know this isn't done in anywhere near the same style, but they're getting me with the Giant Size nostalgia.
I might check it out. And also from Marvel Comics, a couple of issue ones. You have New Avengers issue 1, which features a new Avengers team featuring Carnage, who's Eddie Brock right now, the Hulk, Namor, Clea, and Wolverine, as well as the Winter Soldier, Black Widow, and Wolverine's daughter, X-23. It is written by Sam Humphries, art by Tom Lima. So I guess it's kind of leaning a little bit into the new Avengers, the Thunderbolts movie with Bucky, but or Winter Soldier, but the rest of the characters are new.
I like Sam Humphries.
Interesting team. I'll check it out. Yeah. I'll check out the first issue.
I'll take a look at the preview pages anyway.
And also, as if that wasn't enough, The Death of the Silver Surfer, issue 1.
No! Not Norrin Rod!
From writer Greg Pak, with artist Sumit Kumar. And so this is, I guess it's what it sounds like. It's the final voyage of the Silver Surfer.
Well, yeah, you gotta kill off dude Silver Surfer to make room for girl Silver Surfer.
That's true, because in the movie, that makes sense.
So,
all right, that's it. I mean, there's other stuff, but there's the next issue of Transformers and other stuff. But so much next week. I hope you're ready.
Yeah, I braced myself.
Okay, brace it.
Just saying. All right. Well, hey guys, we'd love to hear what you're disappointed in this summer. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, X, and TikTok.
I'm not gotten used to the TikTok yet. So
yeah, I haven't either. I don't think I've posted anything all week, so we'll be better about that.
Just don't be alarmed when you see Paul dancing. When you get over there on his TikTok videos. So
Spider-Man dancing.
Uh-huh. All right. We'll see you guys later, guys.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.